Good morning, everyone. I'm calling the meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015, and it is 8:01. I am joined this morning with my fellow committee members, Representative Ortiz. I know I got your name. Representative Ortiz, Vice Chair Seaton, Representative Reinbold, Representative Nagyak, and Representative Drummond. Thank you for being here this morning. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everybody to turn their cell phones off, make sure that they're on silent or vibrate. We haven't had donuts or veggies or anything yet, and probably we'll keep it that way. We'll all be on a good diet. Today we're going to hear presentations from Mayor DeVilbiss of the Matsu Borough, along with Assemblyman Jim Sykes from Matsu Borough. We're then going to hear from Delena Johnson. She is here in the building, who is from the city of Palmer. After that, we are going to hear from Assemblyman Ernie Hall and the municipal attorney, Dennis Wheeler, who is going to be Mayor Sullivan's designee from the municipality of Anchorage. We are beginning a series of hearings pertaining to the municipal regulation of marijuana. During the week, we'll also be hearing from a number of municipalities about the issue that they're confronting in the anticipation of the effective date of ballot measure 2. Welcome, Representative Hughes. My intent for the committee is to hear from the presenters, and including our local government stakeholders and departmental representatives. Before we take up HB 75 or any other related legislation, it is my belief that this is the most appropriate committee for this kind of work for the local governments, municipalities, and communities to help them craft and to help craft language that is responsive to their concerns as the legislature works on our statutory framework. I will have our committee aide, Heath Hilliard, provide us a brief guide for where the committee will be headed in the next several weeks and how he's been working with the municipalities and local governments, along with myself, to prepare a committee substitute for HB 75. Mr. Hilliard, please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Heath Hilliard. I am committee aide for the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Per the Chair's request, I just thought I would share with the committee kind of the direction that the Chair's office is moving with regard to handling the municipal regulation of marijuana. Prior to the beginning of this session, Representative Tilton was in contact with a number of municipal representatives who expressed some concern about how some of the initiative language was somewhat vague or unclear with regard to how they were going to have the ability to regulate on a local level. To that end, Representative Tilton, on behalf of the committee, introduced HB 75. It should be noted that HB 75 is largely a placeholder bill in which we will allow the committee, our desire was to allow the committee the ability to craft a piece of legislation that was ultimately responsive to the testimony we received from stakeholders. So initially this week we have a series of, I believe, five municipalities that we're going to be hearing from, and then we'll also conclude this week's testimony with testimony from the Alaska Municipal League to sort of do a wrap-up for a number of the smaller communities that weren't able to testify. Next week, at some point in time, I believe that we're intending to bring in representatives from the Division of Community and Regional Affairs and also Cynthia Franklin from the Alcohol Beverage Control Board to talk about some of the language based on Title IV with regard to alcohol that we might want to use as a basis to draft some legislation. So on behalf of the committee and Representative Tilton, I have been working with a number of municipal attorneys throughout the state who are providing background, and you'll see a couple of legal memos in your committee packet today, one from specifically from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, but we anticipate more coming from a number of municipalities. I would like to note that every community that is represented on this panel, every one of their municipal attorneys has been invited to participate, so every one of your communities is going to be part of that discussion. Clearly, we could obviously hear from every municipality throughout the state, but I think time doesn't warrant that. To the end of that, hopefully by the time we conclude some testimony through next week, I will be able to bring before you a comprehensive committee substitute to HB 75 that has been responsive to the testimony we receive over this coming week. So with that, I will defer to our distinguished guests. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hannigan, for the information, and we look forward to that work product. With that, we'll start the testimony. Mayor DeVilbiss, if you please come forward and put your name on the record and introduce your guest as well. Also, is Assemblyman Sykes on the off-net? Okay, he is. Please begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Larry DeVilbiss. I'm the former mayor from the Mat-Su Borough, the fastest and I think only growing part of the state right now. And I have with me our attorney, Mr. Spropoulos. I brought him along so there'd be at least one tie in the room. And we have online Mr. Sykes. We have invited all three of our cities. As you know, we are a municipality that has three incorporated cities within it. And so it brings its own challenges with regard to this new prospect that's before us. And I don't know if Wasilla and Houston are going to check in, but we've opened that door to them, and we're going to try to give them time.
Thank you.
If possible. What we're going to do this morning is just walk through the issues that have arisen as we've started into this process, and which have been approved by our assembly. And so what I'm going to do first of all is let Mr. Spropoulos lay the stage on how the vote came out in the Mat-Su Borough, because it's it again is different from what happened in Anchorage, and may or may not affect how we move forward. Mr. Nick.
Good morning. Again, Nick Spropoulos, Mat-Su Borough Attorney's Office. I go by Nick, so pretty informal. So the mayor asked me to go through and kind of run through the vote tallies. The absentee in question and early voting is something that you have to go to the registers to actually pull out those exact numbers. So what I have are the poll numbers off of the state website. And area-wide in Mat-Su, the ballot initiative actually failed. It was 19,018 votes for it and 20,566 against. And in Palmer, it was 779 for it and 724 against, so it passed. In Wasilla, it was 9024 and 1,022 against, so it failed. And then in Houston, it was 304 for yes and then 226 for no, so it passed. So we have a little bit of a split, but it was all pretty close, I think, if you look at the numbers. And as the mayor mentioned, our vote turnout was almost exactly the opposite of Anchorage. I think in Anchorage, it was by about that same margin, but the vote result was the other way. He asked me to mention that, so do you want me to go into the next?
No. Okay. What I'd like to do at this point is just outline what we've done to bring these issues to this point, and I think that's important because we didn't just pull these things out of the air. Shortly after the vote, the four of us mayors got together to figure out how we were going to move forward. And we immediately realized that there were issues that needed to be resolved on the state level before we could know how to begin. And we're going to walk through those issues. We had a town hall meeting following that to take in public testimony. And I've got to say, I think it was the best attended meeting we've had in our new assembly chambers, standing room only. And I've got to say, it was very well behaved. I went to a couple of the hearings that happened before the election and was kind of dismayed at some of the stuff that went on at those. But we had a good meeting, lots of good input, and a lot of anticipation. I mean, it's almost palpable. People, you know, they're about 3 weeks away from coming out from under a cloud, just on the personal recreation side. But there's a lot of business entrepreneurs that are just itching to get going. So we took that in. We immediately took those issues in the form of the resolution that that we have forwarded to you. And at the same assembly meeting, we passed those resolutions with a few modifications, and we're going to walk through those. And we also approved a an advisory committee that Assemblymember Sykes brought forward so that this could be an ongoing process. We also met with Taylor Bickford and Bruce Schulte so that we could know what their thinking was and if there were some common concerns there, and I was surprised there was, and we'll mention those on the way. And then most recently, we met with Lance Kitterling, who is in charge of the drug force on the Palmer Troopers and had just gotten back from Arizona and was able to answer questions about how things had rolled out there. I'm sure you know by now that our legislation that passed in ballot measure 2 was very similar to what was already in place in Arizona. So that's pretty much what laid the groundwork for these issues that we've brought forward. And so we'll just start walking through them. And I'm going to let the attorney take the stuff that's more legal-like. And he's going to talk first about powers. When the four of us mayors sat down together, we realized, you know what, we don't know who's in charge on this. And so that's problem number one.
So when the initiative speaks about local government regulation, it says that it uses that phrase, local government. Throughout state statute, when you look at it, it's referred to as municipality. And I apologize if I get technical. I'm a local government nerd, because I'm a local government attorney. But so one of the issues for Matt Sue is we're not a home rule municipality like Juneau or Anchorage or Sitka. We're a second-class borough. We're general law municipality like Fairbanks, Ketchikan, Kenai, Kodiak, Matt Sue. And so for us, we have cities within our borough. And the question becomes, when it comes to the marijuana regulations, do our powers extend into the cities or not? And what we call that is area-wide power or non-area-wide power. And the law says that municipalities can vote to, you know, ban the either the growing or the processing or the cultivation. You know, it uses those specific terms. I tend to think of it as the growing, the processing, the testing, and the selling. And one of our prime comments is that that needs clarification. Because from our perspective, when you look at this law and you look at what marijuana commercial operations might look like, it really is a planning function. We're worried about, you know, land use patterns, impacts, is it compatible with surrounding areas, does it fit in our comprehensive plan like any other kind of business use would be. We do have regulations on the local level regarding, you know, alcohol, regarding both package stores and liquor dispensaries in the Mat, so you have to come get a conditional use permit. In talking with the assembly, if you look at the resolution that was passed, the third whereas clause says clarification is needed regarding the powers granted to the boroughs and the cities within those boroughs. And that's what we're referring to. And in speaking with the other difference with Matt Sue is we're a strong manager form of government where our manager is the day-to-day administrator and sets the overall policy and tells the employees what to do on a day-to-day basis. That's unlike Fairbanks and Kenai. Ketchikan is the same way as we are with a strong manager form of government. In speaking with the manager and, you know, asking, you know, where staff wants to go, it's his preference, and I'm related to you, that this be more construed as an area-wide power, that we can turn around and then work with the cities. To give you an example, fireworks is a non-area-wide power right now. So you have 400,000 people between Anchorage and Mat-Su that all drive to the city of Houston to go buy fireworks because it's a non-area-wide power and nobody can tell Houston yes, no, or you know, locate them where or wherever. The boroughs, at least on the administrative level, would want to avoid that. We would want to be able to make sure that there's some coordination and some say in what happens. I know that the cities may be resistant to that. I know Mayor Cottle specifically has voiced that. I think we can work through it, but if we're asked what the preference is for Mat-Su, that is the preference. And if not, at least it be clarified, because the last thing we want to do is we don't want to be looking at it. It's something that's gray, because of course everybody's got their own lawyers, and so everybody's lawyers has their own opinion, and then we wind up going, well, who are we going to listen to? And that gets clarified, you know, here, the legislature. And so our first concern is that it be delineated clearly, you know, how this falls and where the powers exactly lie.
Thank you.
Representative Nagak.
So what you're saying is that each community has their could make their own rules on the, in their city limits, or?
Well, that's what we're asking for clarification on. Under the initiative right now, we tend to look at it as a framework. It really is a broad framework with lots of holes to be filled in, and that's one of those issues. Is when it says the local governments may, you know, limit or restrict or prohibit the growing, the processing, the testing, and the retail, does that mean that if a city wants to allow it, but the borough says no, does it mean it still happens, or does it mean that the borough can say, well, no, we're not going to allow processing in this city, but we are going to lay retail in this city? And I think for, again, when looking at it as more like a land use question, that it's more appropriately an area-wide power. Either way, even if the committee disagrees or ultimately the legislature disagrees, we would ask for some clarification to make it clear. You know, another area of law where it tends to get muddied with who's in charge, just to draw an example, is dispatch for emergency services. Each municipality gets to do their own, and out in Mat-Su we have two dispatch centers for, you know, three municipalities. Before, including us. So we want to avoid, you know, the type of situation where anybody's disagreeing, and you do that by making sure one person can make the decision.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I'm trying to draw a parallel with alcohol. Are you saying that the borough itself or boroughs throughout the state then should have the ability to tell all municipalities or communities within the borough that they're either opted out of alcohol or they're going to be dry or they're going to be damp, and that covers each one of the municipalities? That seems to be the corollary to what you're asking for on marijuana. Is that, am I interpreting that right?
If I may, through the chair, I think alcohol would be somewhat different. Alcohol has a long history of being here. Everybody knows what it is. The rules are there. The rules have been there for a very long time. You know, the numerical limits are set by state law. The local option goes to the voters. Here, with this law as passed, if the, you know, what I would call local option in terms of limiting or prohibiting does not need to go to the voters under this initiative. It says that it can be done by the assembly. So it's a little different in nature. In Mat-Su specifically, we delegated to our cities planning powers. So as long as their plans and their laws fit within the overall borough comprehensive plan, we've delegated to them the power to zone, the power to plan, the power to set permits themselves. It still allows the borough to reserve the right to take actions if something's happening in the city that impacts, you know, major traffic patterns, overall growth and development. And again, when we're talking about a new business and new, you know, potentially everything from cultivation to sale and everything in between, that's one of the things that we would like clarification on. And if the answer is no, every city's in charge of absolutely their own destiny, and the boroughs can't tell them what to do, okay. One of the, you know, the things to bring to the committee, though, is that that's an area there that has some confusion. And you may get city attorneys in here saying, no, there's no confusion. We've got it all. It could use some clarification, whether it be through direct legislation or whatever administrative board ultimately has, whether it's the ABC board or a new board, that they have proper rule-making authority to be able to say what it means.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, I just want to make it clear here during these hearings, we're not going to be addressing the criminal aspects of the legislation at all. We're strictly looking at it from the, you know, the sideboards of helping with the municipalities and local governing agencies, just so that we know that that's not in the purview of the CRA committee. Also, I'd like to acknowledge that Assemblyman Sykes is online. Assemblyman Sykes, are you there?
Yes, Madam Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you. I would invite you to comment as we're having a hearing from Mayor DeVilbiss and the attorney for the borough. Just wanted to welcome you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Nagyak.
Your comment about this being new or, you know, not having any experience or whatever in it, but Alaska has that marijuana, you know, quasi-legal or whatever you want to call it, and 4 ounces in since the 70s. And I mean, you know, that's nothing new. And now we're in new territory where whether that's going to be the case with only 4 ounces allowed, since it is now 2, I think. So, so do you see anything changing in that with the limit of 4 ounces for the far future?
If I may, through the chair, you know, as it pertains to the business aspect, this law, that 4 ounces, if I understand it correctly, means the 4 ounces that you possess in your home. The way I read the initiative here, it allows you to possess an ounce anywhere, in your pocket walking down the street, in your hand walking down the street, because it specifically says display. That's another thing we're going to get to a little bit later during our testimony here. So I think some of the analysis does change, because what it does is it really is the business aspect that becomes new. Even though medical marijuana is a legal possibility here, to my knowledge, I don't think we have any medical marijuana dispensaries. Certainly outside of the cities in the Mat-Su borough, we don't have any. Whether there's one hiding in one of the cities somewhere, I could be wrong, but I don't think we have any. So we're talking about a brand new type of business, and again, when it comes to land use regulation and compatibility, you know, business districts, things like that, that's really where our focus is going to be, you know, from Mat-Su, depending on what the assembly and mayor ultimately decide to do.
Because, you know, it is commercially related, especially, you know, the duties of this committee. In your area, when you talk about area-wide powers, is there quite a bit of divergence? Is there quite a bit of differences in terms of zoning laws and commercial activity laws amongst the different communities? So is there a lot of variance there? Does each little community have its own thing? So therefore, if that's the case, then I guess you could say each community could have its own rules in relationship to marijuana commercial activity too. Is that kind of true?
Correct. If when it says local government here means that every city can make their own rules, that means potentially you could have the three cities with different rules and then the borough with different rules on top of that.
Okay.
And so again, when we're talking about businesses, land right. use patterns, commerce and activity, that may not be the best thing because it's inconsistent as you cross borders. It might be tough to get a handle on what the rules are depending on what piece of ground you're standing on and where a line is on a map.
Right.
So, and again, I can only speak to Matt Sue. And Matt Sue right now, we've delegated to the cities the powers to do their local land use and planning. We did not delegate the powers for subdivision. So if you want to subdivide any land, you still come to the Mat-Su borough, even if you're
okay.
in the cities.
Okay.
So there's an example of how we kind of split it out, because the borough, you know, we're concerned about septic and usable area. We're very rural, you know, even in parts of the cities is somewhat, you know, a little rural. So if you want to subdivide land in Mat-Su, even though we've given planning to the cities, if you want to subdivide, you still come to the Mat-Su borough. And then, you know, several years ago, when the borough passed a power plant ordinance regulating, you know, power plants, we actually revoked the city's planning authority for purposes of power plants to make sure that the rules were consistent borough-wide. There was a concern by the administration back then of a giant coal plant going in, and then, of course, the effects go into the cities. And so it's those kinds of things that when you're saying, well, do the effects really go outside of the cities or not?
Right.
Which is why fireworks is a good example, because the effects of fireworks go well beyond the city of Houston. But it's non-area-wide. There's nothing we can do.
Madam Chair, could I have another follow-up question?
Certainly. Representative Ortiz.
All right.
It's okay.
So would it be within the purview of the state, because we have, you know, unincorporated areas, because we have second class boroughs and then those differences, would it be within the purview of the state to be able to come up with some sort of uniform statement and uniform regulation in relationship to marijuana that would have to apply to non-borough areas? I mean, would you have the power to do that? I mean, would the state even have the power to make commercial rules or some sort of rules about it and have it apply to everywhere, because some areas are not boroughs and some areas are. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Through the chair. So the unorganized borough
right.
is generally governed by the Alaska legislature. So the rules that you pass will apply in the unorganized borough. One of the clarifications and questions is the initiative clearly says that municipalities can, you know, prohibit, limit, regulate numbers and quantities. So in the unorganized borough, the people that would be doing that would be the legislature. So those rules would apply.
Oh, okay.
And then the question is how do the rules then reach into the boroughs, certainly for general law boroughs? On home rule, you'd have to talk to Anchorage or Sitka or Juneau or somebody. But for the general law boroughs, it would depend on what the rules look like that you draw up and exactly how they're written as to how much they apply. I think under the initiative, there's certainly contemplated that, you know, boroughs would retain some form of authority, certainly to limit it or prohibit entirely, depending on what the regs say.
Thank you.
I think we'll have one last question and then let you continue from Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. It's good to see people from home here. You talked about how in land use the cities have the planning ability for the planning, but the borough does the subdividing. So I understand that your preference is that there be consistency throughout the borough, and I appreciate that. I'm wondering, are you considering Plan B and coming up with a list of what might make sense, kind of like the planning in the city and the subdividing by the borough, in regard to marijuana, how they're things that if there doesn't seem to be the appetite here in the legislature to give the borough-wide control in that way, are you coming up with a plan B? I would actually ask that perhaps, you know, for me, I would like to hear what that is, and you may not have that yet today, but I hope that you consider it in the event that things move that direction.
If I may, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Through the Chair, the first Borough Assembly meeting after certification of the election in December, I gave a presentation to the Borough Assembly, and that was one of the first things I told them was, we've got to get together with the cities administratively through the mayors and start talking about what is it that you're going to want to do and what is it the borough is going to want to do, and start that dialogue. And I think that dialogue has started, as the mayor referenced. I know there's been mayors' meetings. I've attended one to talk. The mayor's town hall forum, and it was the opportunity not only for our mayor but for all the mayors to get input from the people and then have their dialogues with their assemblies and their city council, or their city councils, our assembly, and then keep talking. So the answer is yes, it's an ongoing process right now. The dialogue has started. And you know, hopefully a lot of these issues in terms of we get clear rules from the state and then we work within those rules, but the dialogue for what you would say is plan B, if the rules aren't clear, if, as long as we all agree, then at least in Mat-Su, hopefully there's no problem. But the mayors have been talking, and I think talking quite frequently, in terms of what they're going to do. It's also up to the local legislative bodies on what they want to do, so that discussion takes a while.
Representative Hughes.
And as follow-up, and I know you've talked about needing the framework from the state, how important that is. Do you have, as you've been gone through the different issues, and, you know, if the plan B, what makes sense maybe for the city as opposed to the borough, have you also gone through issues and have suggestions as far as what you think makes most sense statewide? For instance, I know one thing I've heard is the definition of public versus private, something like that across the state might make sense rather than by city by city. So do you have a list of those things that you want the state to address?
We're just waiting to go through them.
Oh.
Representative Hughes, I think that's one of the reasons we were holding these hearings here for this in this venue, so that we can help the governing bodies when we prepare the CS, and that's why we were having these hearings, to hear from the different governing bodies the list of the things that they're looking for guidance from us for.
Thank you, and I will just have to say I have to leave because I have another meeting, so I'm going to miss some of the good part, but I do have my staff here who will fill me in. So thank you, gentlemen, for coming today.
All right. Mayor DeVilles, if you'd like to continue. One last question. Representative.
He raised the issue of, organized boroughs and unorganized boroughs. Now, would this be a possible impetus for the marijuana issue, that there would be move in unorganized boroughs to form organized boroughs? I mean, would this, which is probably because it's would be an, because of the rules of being organized and unorganized, that, and the state runs the unorganized boroughs, so would that possibly be something that people might consider, to become an organized borough, to get away from the state's control?
Madam Chair, I don't know how the state wants to do that, but that has been a piece of our discussion within the borough. We've got areas that we would like to see start moving towards being a city, and an issue like this could be an incentive if they want to do something we don't want to do, and it's a non-area-wide power. That would be one way for them to be able to do it.
Mayor DeVilles, if you could continue on in your testimony and some of your recurring themes and what kind of elements in the aspects of the initiative language that you would like us to address.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to shift gears here.
I understand, and I apologize. There's lots of committee questions. This is one of those big issues, and we will give you the time, and you know, we may have to do a...
Yeah, well, we invite those. And the next issue I wanted to bring up, and from this point, we're just going to go point by point through this resolution that I think you already have in your possession.
And if I can ask committee members just to hold their questions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we would like the state to clarify what 1 ounce of marijuana means. This came out in the hearings before the election, and it was not answered. There was ambiguity. If you went strictly by the letter, it looks to us like 1 ounce could include an ounce of raw fiber or an ounce of liquid concentrate. And that's the way it is in Arizona, and it is a problem. One dose of marijuana is 10 milligrams of THC, and 1 ounce of liquid concentrate is 28,300 grams of THC. It's even the people that promoted this initiative, when we met with them, agreed that that's an unreasonable range to be included under 1 ounce. So we would like that taken care of on the state level. Next thing is we're suggesting that you prohibit non-Alaska produced marijuana. We know there's some coming in the state now, but if this we would like to see Alaska grown agriculture and business promoted instead of opening a door to everything coming in from outside. You'll be glad to know in my questioning during our hearing process, everybody seems to agree that most of it is being grown up here now, so
Alaskan grown.
We're on the right trend.
There's a name for that.
And there was a question, it seems like there's an ambiguity that could be abused about the definition of per person. As you know, in the personal use, there's the 1 ounce, there's the six plants. If you've got six adults over 21 in a house, how is that going to be handled? Especially if two or three of those are working up on the slope, how are the authorities going to handle that?
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a limit on the amount of alcohol you can have in your house right now in the borough of in Matsu Borough?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
No. And the users assure me there's no ambiguity about that, but it's going to be a problem, I think, with enforcement because there's room for abuse there because you're dealing with living plants, not a liquid.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Abuse of the plants,
well,
or abuse of
plants.
the marijuana.
Well, the marijuana. Thank you.
Mayor DeVilbiss, please continue.
Okay, Madam Chair, we strongly request restricting packaging that entices minors, and we see a need to differentiate between medicinal, recreational, and hemp. I think it would be appropriate for the state to divide this out by definition and by regulation. I don't think the same tax should lay over the medicinal as lays over the recreational. And the hemp, the industrial hemp, is an entirely different it's not a different species, but it's a different subspecies that's easily identified. And so we'd like the state to, as much as you can, differentiate those. It would make it easier on our level. There was testimony right now when you buy marijuana on the street, they don't know if there's contamination, they don't know what the potency is. Labeling is going to be very important. So the state needs to establish some minimum standards. Now, just exactly what's going to be identified and documented. So I'm going to let the attorney speak to the issue of public, which has already come up a little bit.
Would you go ahead and give us your name again for the record for the
sure,
recorder?
Nick Spiropoulos. I can spell it out for Spiropoulos.
Thank you. Go ahead.
and I just want to re-acknowledge Senator Sykes is on the phone. I know that we're here, so we've been talking. So anytime the chair wants to hear from him, I guess we can do that. But I think I've seen also with the committee materials for today that others have expressed the definition of public. I just want to reiterate that is one of the concerns. It says, you know, consumption of marijuana in public is prohibited. That word public needs a good definition. And whatever that definition is, we want it to be clear. From Matsu, we're second class borough. We don't have a police department. I know that's not the function here. It's not our function either.
Great.
Which is a good fit, I think, for us to come talk with you because we don't do criminal enforcement. But whatever that whatever that law is for our citizens, whatever that definition is, it needs to be clear. And if it's going to be a definition promulgated through an agency, I know that the ABC board has come out and put on their website a definition of what they think public means for purposes of this law. Our request would be that the legislature make sure that that agency has the authority to make that interpretation, because it's not entirely clear right now if they have the authority to interpret that particular word. They may disagree. They may show up and say, of course we have the authority. But from our perspective, again, we want as clear as can be. And if it's up to the agency to define what public is, then we would ask the legislature clearly delegate that to them. I think our preference would be that the legislature actually take it up, through this committee onward or however that works, to define exactly what public means and mm-hmm. how does it work. There was testimony and discussion previously, but I think it's covered in our...
Representative Nagyak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to the previous whereas on the contaminant issue, maybe controlling it within the new loans or something, because right now there has been instances where we hear that the marijuana that's going around has been laced with other drugs and sold or completely different drug instead of marijuana. So I think there's that concern I'm sharing with you about how we can control that, with contaminants or with with whatever that the marijuana that may be laced with this, because I'm concerned about that.
Madam Chair.
Mayor DeVellis.
Yeah, and that's a good concern, and you could deal with it like you do with other food products. There could be a minimum level of contaminants that's allowed, or there could be some contaminants that are totally disallowed. And this is something that I think Colorado has dealt with after the fact. I believe I'm right on this from my briefing. They have prohibited the use of butane as a extraction medium, because that's where the source of all these explosions come from. And it doesn't have to be done that way, but it also introduces contaminants. So, that's a concern.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Assemblyman Sykes if he would like have something he'd like to share with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. This is Jim Sykes. I'm a member of the Matsuburo Assembly District 1. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Looking at the framework of HB 75 that has been put out, I think that the committee that we formed by resolution is still in its stages of formation. The resolution, I believe you should have two resolutions, 15-006, which the mayor was walking through, which kind of encapsulated some of the public testimony, the resolution establishing the committee, 15-007, is established really to vacuum up a lot of information, to look at the upsides and downsides of the myriad of issues, to seek input from the public, exchange information with the legislature and other municipalities, and we also expect to learn a lot from the states that have licensed it. And so we hope that we don't have to start from ground zero if there's some things that can work. And one of the things that I have recently looked at is Eagle County, Colorado. They're a kind of a rural community that has some highly populated areas and a lot of rural unpopulated areas that seems to have a lot of similar things. But we haven't discussed these, so we hope to get these before the committee and to get information to you as a plan B that Representative Hughes suggested. we've heard a lot of concerns from people that the industry needs to be small, homegrown, and Alaska-based. That was mentioned once before. But somebody who wants to have a fairly small growing operation, and some people have been visiting operations in Colorado and Washington, they say that they would like to be able to have a vertically integrated business where they have growing and manufacturing or processing and sales all on one location. And that may make sense for a very small business. However, if you allow the kind of vertical information that allows an industrial corporation to come in and do everything, that could be a very different matter. So I did want to pass on that concern. There's also been a concern that we, the legislature and the cities and municipalities and the boroughs need to get regulations in place sooner rather than later, because if growing, manufacturing, and retailing is going to be allowed, the longer we wait, the longer that there will be the black market will continue to take advantage of the marketplace that is going to be legalized. So I just lost one of my pages of testimony. Anyway, I provided it to you. I did want to assure the committee that we have sent, or will soon, I don't know if it's actually been sent, a audio file and a full transcript for anybody who wants to get into what the public has told us thus far. And when it comes to the regulations and commenting, I don't believe that we're quite ready to make those cases, because if you look at the last two pages of our resolution, it lists the kind of interest. We tried to pick diverse interests, and yeah, we missed a couple, but we do have a seat for each one of the three cities and the borough, so that we know that those will be considered. And the charge of the committee is specifically to consider all of the upsides and downsides so that there's a fair discussion about what we want. And we will get that done as quickly as we possibly can, but we're not there yet. And we look forward to working with the legislature and having a good flow of information so that there is an exchange of ideas that makes sense. And I'll be happy to try and answer any questions that anyone has.
Doesn't look like. Oh, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is actually for all three of these gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I were in Seattle the last couple of months several times, and we took the opportunity to visit marijuana dispensaries or stores, whatever they're called. In my opinion, the biggest problem is going to be the cash basis of these businesses. I don't see any discussion about the fact that because it's illegal at the federal level, these businesses operate on a cash basis. We looked at the point of sale system. They're very sophisticated. They have very sophisticated computer systems. They have beautiful, clean, newly designed stores. They're very elegant. And big computer screens. The clerk showed us their point of sale system, and she said the state of Washington can look right into their accounts. They require every operation in the state to use the same POS system, and they can look at it. Of course, it's private. The customer names are not listed, but you don't need the customer names because it's a cash business. You don't take credit cards. You don't accept checks. And I don't think anybody is talking about the impact of a heavily cash business in a place where 63% of the folks carry guns. This is a serious issue that I certainly will look for a way to handle. Has there been any discussion in the Matsu Borough or any of your cities on the fact that these are cash basis businesses, and does the police department or the troopers have some concerns about it?
Madam Chair.
Mayor DeVilmas.
Yeah, Larry DeVilmas. We have included on our committee a position for banking, primarily for that purpose. We've not worked through a recommendation. It's a federal problem, so
I'm not sure you can solve it. So that's why it's not in our resolution, but we're aware of it.
This is Jim Sykes, through the chair to Representative Drummond. This is Jim Sykes. We have had some discussions on it. We haven't got any answers, but so far we have learned that there are two state-chartered credit unions in Washington that only do business within the state that have entered into the process. It's not a one-step process like going to Fred Meyer, but it is a two-step process that they are either contemplating using or tending to support. We have learned that North Dakota has their own sovereign bank. We don't know what that means yet, and we do know that there is one state-chartered, at least one state-chartered credit union within the state that might or might not be an answer, but we agree that it is a problem and that it deserves a solution, but we don't know what it is.
Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
The first set of stores we tried to visit, it was late on a Sunday evening, and they were closed. We found them. They had these heavy metal doors that were pulled down in front of all the windows. There were no windows visible or anything like that. It looked like an inner city. It was not in an inner city. It was not in a ghetto-like neighborhood, but it looked like a business in a ghetto that has to arm itself against its neighbors. And all the surrounding businesses looked perfectly normal, you know, full retail glass windows, no wired windows or anything like that. And that's, I believe, because of the cash basis, that's the reason they are heavily armed. Each store has to behave as a bank vault. And I said to the clerk, I said, how do you get paid? She says they put cash in an envelope and give it to us on payday.
Mandevillis and Assemblyman Sykes, I was wondering from your perspective, and I see that it is in your resolution, how you feel about the need for a separate board on the state level to promulgate the regulations and monitoring the licensing. If you have any comment on that.
Yes, and I hope I get to put all these on the record, even if I just read them.
Sure.
Before we get done.
Okay.
But yes, we, based on the bulk of testimony, I think unanimous testimony on the issue of the board was that there be a separate board. It's considered this is so much more complex and probably both in complexity and in magnitude that it felt like a separate board should be established for the regulation and control for marijuana.
Thank you, Mayor. If you would like to go ahead and just kind of wrap up and go ahead and just read through the
okay.
issues, and I apologize, we let the questioning get a little long-winded there. So if you'd like to do that and then maybe get together with my office or send a memo, we'll be able to address those issues
okay.
for you. Thank you.
We would like to state the state to be clear whether, as you know, the state mandates a farm use tax exemption for farm use. Make sure if you intend for that to include the growth and production of marijuana. It was recommended that the taxation on the state level at least be applied towards prevention, treatment, testing, enforcement, and security. We are asking that you set specific rules up for the unorganized barrel because that affects us a lot and affects how we approach things.
Excuse me, Mayor DeVillis, I'd like to recognize Representative Billett has joined us. And please continue.
We says where other states have found that infused edible products are problematic, the regulations should be addressed very clearly. And I'm going to repeat the one that Assemblymember Sykes mentioned, that preponderance of our testimony was on, and what our assembly asked for was allowing an unlimited number of small vertically integrated operations. That might be a regulation problem, but they should all be licensed and everything, but that is the model that works best in agriculture up here. There was general agreement, but not universal, that public advertising should not not be allowed. The stuff's being treated like cancer or pornography. You can't grow it within sight of a road or anything, so why should we be advertising? We ask for the state to consider setting business hours, although would we have the power to do that, Mr. Attorney?
We might.
We might. It depends, yeah, what you give us. It was also suggested that the state consider allowing permits for cultivation facilities 4 months before retail sales, because, you know, there's a gap there between when you get started and when you've got something to sell. And I'd like to be clear that although we've brought these issues forward, we have not even started the discussion about how we're going to deal with the commercialization of marijuana. We want to see what the landscape looks like before we answer that question. So whether we allow it or disallow it in the borough is going to be a discussion. We'll be taking input from our committee. We'll be looking at the table you set for us. And I thank you for your time. Did you have anything to wrap up, Mr. Attorney?
If I may, Madam Chair, a couple other things. One issue that was brought up, it's actually in our resolution, I think it's the 17th whereas clause. Consider, this was a member of the public that came to us and said, consider the landlord-tenant law. Mm-hmm. You know, can a landlord tell a tenant they can't possess it? It's something that certainly nobody internally had defined. And then the other thing was, this was brought forward as a regulate marijuana like alcohol type initiative. That was the big campaign. For those of us that deal with local municipal tax law, there are severe limits on the ability to tax alcohol at the local level. It's a sales tax only, and that sales tax must match your rate. And we would want, as much as possible, to preserve all the local options for taxes, that we could excise, potentially sales tax, use tax, gross receipts tax, whatever it might be that the borough decide to do. Our request would be to preserve the local ability to deal with it on a local level, as we see fit. And then, just I think as the mayor had said for here, and then the assembly can decide how to allocate that money towards education, treatment, or something of that nature. That request came from our manager as well. And then I guess my final thing is, as you're looking at definitions, one of the things that actually Assemblymember Sykes had previously pointed out, I don't think it's been mentioned here yet, so I'll mention it now, is a definition of that word assist, because it says not only can you possess, transport, consume, have 1 ounce, it's also not a crime or a civil offense to assist someone in doing that. Well, what exactly does that mean? There's a business regulation there too. We saw in the newspaper recently the person that opened up business early and started transporting apparently got stung by the APD. Are there transporters that are going to be opening up saying, well, I'm assisting others, therefore I've got 50 ounces because I've got 50 customers, so they're not really my 1 ounce. It's, you know, that could use some clarification from the business end on how that might work.
Representative Dunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Spiropoulos, you mentioned taxing alcohol, something about matching the sales tax rate.
Correct.
Could you clarify what you mean by that?
There's a state law that applies to, I don't know if it applies to home rule municipalities or not, like Anchorage, but it certainly applies to Mat-Su. It says that the only tax that you could levy on alcohol is a sales tax. And then there's a Alaska Supreme Court opinion that says because of the way the statute is written, it implies, and so this court ruled that, The sales tax rate must match your other sales tax rate. So in other words, if you have a generalized sales tax of 3%, mm-hmm. you can't turn around and tax alcohol at 6 or 7
mm-hmm.
or 10.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Yeah, and Anchorage has a, there's an ordinance coming before the assembly right now. We'll probably hear about it when Anchorage testifies in a little bit. Thank you. I thought that's what you meant. So
yeah.
So if your local sales tax now is 3% in, I don't know what it is in Palmer or Wasilla.
Yeah. If I may, Madam Chair, the cities each have their sales tax. At the borough, we have a bed tax, which is considered a sales tax mm-hmm. for purposes of, mm-hmm. and it's 5%.
Okay. Anchorage must be different because we have the bed tax in Anchorage went from 12% to 8% to 12% when the new convention center was built, and the additional 4% goes entirely to pay that off. But all of those went before the voters. All of our sales taxes require, I believe, 60% from the voters. So, okay, yeah, it is different. Thank you.
Representative Magak.
I lost a question.
Okay. Mayor DeVelbus.
Madam Chair, did you want to give Palmer, I noticed,
yes.
the mayor's back there.
Yes.
I'm willing to
Mr.
yield.
Or some of them are
saying. And Assemblyman.
Madam Chair, this is Jim Sykes. Can I make just a couple of closing points?
Yes, thank you. Assemblyman Sykes, please.
A number of people talked to us about who are considering business models to grow marijuana have advised not to make the tax rate too high. It would encourage the black market to continue to have a greater influence, even though a potential new industry might bring in significant revenue, there are costs. And one of the tax issues is also if you do create another medical marijuana sort of section of the law to figure out what the tax rate is, because medical marijuana use rose in other states significantly because it was cheaper. So you have to kind of find or a tax rate might work. Anyway, back to the cost, the expected need to fund regulation, inspection, enforcement, education, public health, and other aspects of legalizing marijuana are upfront costs. And since we don't have dedicated funds in this state, perhaps a way can be found through licensing regulations to pay for the services that the state and local governments will need to provide in order to implement the law. I read that Colorado had some success in that area. We also received some strong testimony that licenses not be allowed to have value like liquor licenses do today. Recommendations included not being able to sell or transfer a license. While there's differing opinion on whether to limit the number of licenses, there is widespread agreement that licenses should not become an economic asset. The last thing I wanted to leave you with, and that is I recently learned that Washington is actually instituting an evaluation process that monitors the effects of the laws that they're creating. So Colorado recently reported some drops in some areas of crime, but increases in medical responses that were needed. And so we're at the front end of this process, and I'm fairly certain that adjustments will need to be made. And with that, I'd like to thank the committee for its work in this complex issue, and we are ready as a borough to help you in any way that we can. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Assemblymember Sykes. Representative Nagyak has one last question, and then we're going to ask that the rest of the questions from the committee members be forwarded to our office, and we will get them to you for response.
Thank you so much. I remember the temporary amnesia. Federal law shall preempt state law, and according to federal law, the marijuana is still illegal, and it's a federal offense. And so, you know, everybody flies everywhere in Alaska, especially in the hubs. And I know they don't do security checks in the small towns and stuff, but they do in the hubs. So, but my concern is the airport security. They find someone with some marijuana. What happens?
Through the chair to Representative Nyack.
assuming
I don't know the answer to what happened, but you've illuminated a very difficult problem that we have in Alaska that other states don't tend to have because they have roads everywhere. If you want to even talk about Juneau, there's federal regulation of vessels, and there's federal regulation of airplanes. And so if you don't grow it in Juneau, it doesn't look like there's a legal way to get it. And I don't know what the answer to that is, but you've illuminated a very interesting problem that's going to have to be dealt with, I believe.
And, Madam, through the chair to Representative, a lot of that is driven by the federal policymakers. Just like with the banking laws, Attorney General Holder at this time has told the states where it's legal that he wasn't going to substantially interfere with the legal operations. Federal air carriers are not willing to risk their charters, from what I understand, just like banks are not willing to risk their charters. There's actually a letter issued by the U.S. Attorney General's office to the banks saying they won't penalize them for dealing with it. Banks don't trust them. They don't believe it. They don't want to take the risk, the risk that they may take. So I think a lot of it will be driven at the federal level by either the Attorney General or the Secretary of Homeland Security, and the current nominee, Loretta Lynch, has already come out, at least in testimony before the Senate panel, and said she opposes legalization of marijuana. So it remains to be seen if she's going to take the same type, hands-off type attitude that Attorney General Holder does. But if you get arrested at the airport, you wind up in federal court, so it really becomes a federal issue.
I'd like to thank Mayor DeVilbiss, attorney who I can't say his last name,
Spiropoulos,
and Assemblyman Sykes for coming before the committee today. And any additional issues or questions, you can just send a memo to our office. We appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And at this time, I'd like to invite Mayor Delina Johnson from the City of Palmer to join us. Thank you for your patience in waiting. Also, I just want to remind the committee members and those of us online that we are looking at the marijuana issue as it pertains to the community and regional affairs. We're not looking at the criminal side of it. We're looking at how, taking testimony on how we can help the local governing bodies. So, Representative Seaton, Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to add to that, the House Health and Social Services Committee is hearing House Bill 59, which deals with health and social service aspects. And I noticed that Representative Nagyak brought up mixing with other drugs, and there's a provision in there looking at mixing with alcohol or nicotine. And so I just address the public to, if they have issues surrounding that, those kinds of issues, that this afternoon from 3 to 5, we will be looking at that aspect of this issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Mayor Delina Johnson, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having this hearing. I think there's lots of discussion to be had, and I'm glad that we're taking some steps to talk about these things, and so thank you for allowing me to be here. And I also want to say thank you to the Matsu Borough for really starting the discussion by putting out some of the concerns that we've had in their resolution that they've already passed. So I won't go over the things that they've touched on, but I do want to present a little bit different perspective as a city mayor within an organized borough. The cities have police powers, which makes a significant difference, and I know we're not wanting to get into that, but we may want to opt out of this regulation, and the borough may want to opt in. And if that's the case, I would encourage you to think of the cities that throughout Alaska that may have a difference of opinion on how they want to regulate marijuana, and that the local government in the city may have a different opinion, and that is important that we're be able to determine our own rules for our community. And I believe that is the intent of the statement of local government, discussion of local government in the initiative. So we also have health powers, which is different from the borough. And we, City of Palmer, in a lot of ways, has a mechanism in place to deal with some of the issues that are already they're being discussed as far as the smoking and public. We have an ordinance, or excuse me, we had a ballot initiative, actually, that was passed that covers vaping, covers smoking. It covers a number of methods, pretty much any method of inhalation within the city, in public spaces and in, say, like an outside smoking area. Those are already covered in ordinance we already have, or code that we already have on the books. So I would encourage you to think about the fact that we already have some of that and not to allow the borough to have the power to change what our regulations that are already in place that actually are going to protect us already. There are a number of complex issues, and I'm would like to answer any questions anyone might have from a city perspective on this issue.
Representative.
Thank you. Local opinion, local government have opinion, it just kind of struck something when somebody of some villagers texted me and asked about the effect some villages that voted for marijuana unanimously in their village, whether it would be overridden by the municipal government. That was a concern, that was given to me by some villagers. The borough be able to preempt what the local people have voted for?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I think that Palmer voted for legalization, where most of the borough did not. Actually, I don't want to quote statistics because I don't know about the specifics there. But either way, whether it's an opt-in or an opt-out, I think that we have to be careful to not put in too broad stroke of regulations, particularly for the cities. I mean, we do have planning powers. Palmer has had, we've been having planning and zoning in Palmer for long before statehood. No one, I think, outside of the city and outside of our city council in our planning and zoning understands where sales might be intrusive, what marketing should look like. Actually, I would hope that you would, this is just on my own, I'm speaking personally, but from what I heard, I agree with the not having a lot of ability to market just anywhere. I think pot kind of markets itself. But no one understands your community as well as your own council does. And if it's in opposition to what the people think, then they can vote those city council members out. But I do think that our cities, if we choose to be dry or whatever our term is going to be, then we need to have that choice.
Any other questions for Mayor Johnson? Okay.
I do have a couple more things. Thank you, if you'll indulge me. One thing that I have heard that's just is generally through almost everyone that every group is that the idea of a separate board is essential, and even amongst a variety of opinions, and then. Again, the police powers we aren't going to talk about, but because cities do have police powers and boroughs do not, it will have an effect on how much we have to spend if we're not listen to. If someone decides from a borough level that sales could be anywhere, and we can't choose as police to decide who we're going to respond to for security activity, then again, it gets back into no one knows your community as well as you do locally.
Representative Nagyak.
Our borough has a borough-wide police force, armed and also controlled by the borough. So it's a completely different situation where I live, because it's cities have given the powers, those kind of powers, to the borough, and they have limited powers in their city. So how would that work?
Well, as far as a unified, like Anchorage is a unified municipality that has both city and borough powers, as does Sitkin, Juneau. I'm not certain if you have a unified borough, but I know that the police powers are generally designated to the borough. I mean, police powers is designated to the cities. I actually think that's probably will be helpful for whoever's making decisions at your borough level, as far as being in, having to consider the police powers too.
Representative Nagyak.
The only powers the cities have, it was a compromise made by the borough and the cities that they would have boats, parks, and cemeteries. Those are the only powers they have in the city. The rest is by the national borough.
Well, and City of Palmer has a number of those number of powers, and we do have planning powers designated to, or delegated to us by the borough. And thank you. I'm sorry, just to speak out of turn. But anyway, so through the chair. The city has a number of powers, and you know that has to be kind of, that's why local determination is so important, because to get into all the different details in different places, I believe that it's difficult from a 10,000 foot view to do that, and that's where local government determines what's best for communities. So, and local government, I guess I'm meaning cities or boroughs. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We appreciate your input. It's an insightful in helping the committee to see what this the feel of the cities and the boroughs, and we appreciate your time in coming to testify with us today.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to hear from the City of Municipality of Anchorage. We have Dennis Wheeler from the municipality. Are you online, Mr. Wheeler?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I also believe Assemblymember Ernie Hall is available as well.
Yes, I'd like to welcome both of you. And Mr. Wheeler, if you'd like to go ahead and start.
Thank you. Through the Chair, committee members, first I want to say that I really appreciate the information you've gathered from the Mat-Su Borough and the cities within that jurisdiction. I think they did a good job of covering the waterfront of issues that I'm going to have, so I'm going to be able to be quite a bit more brief, because I think they hit on some really important high points. But to walk through these, I've got three different categories here I want to cover with the committee. First, there's a question about do I see any gaps or vagueness in the initiative language that I think need to be addressed in the short term. One you've heard about, and that is, what does it mean to be in public, to consume in public, and how that's prohibited. We just recently passed an ordinance to address that issue, obviously, because we expect people to start consuming happily on the 24th for them, and we need to be able to address that, because obviously sidewalks, parks, large common spaces are going to be used, and we'll have to address that. What we did is we basically copied the definition out of our criminal code, which in turn happens to be a copy of what's in the state criminal code. What we did, however, is make sure that there's an exception if properly permitted or licensed under either state or municipal code. So in that way, if there are events or if there are cafes that become licensed properly, those things can happen if that's the will of the state or the Anchorage Assembly or both, however that scheme is set up. The other definition I think needs to be addressed is in the definition of marijuana, there is a term called marijuana concentrate. And then later in the definitions, there's a definition for marijuana products that includes concentrated marijuana. Obviously, there's concern about this, particularly with respect to what is 1 ounce, which was addressed earlier. If you're allowed to have 1 ounce of a marijuana concentrate, that could be a significant amount in terms of potency that could be possessed, transported, etc. Another issue addressed was number of plants per person per household. What's interesting there is it's my understanding that at least in Colorado, one of the problems I ran into was that medical marijuana had its own limits, and those limits were combined under the law, if you will. At least there's a loophole with respect to that and the recreational possession of plants. And in addition, the tax rate for medical marijuana was different. So what you had is a situation where people could have more plants than they anticipated, and the use of medical marijuana increased significantly because the price difference was significant. So that sort of segues into this notion that we'll need to look at the medical marijuana statutes that you have on the books already and see if there aren't some loopholes or problems there in terms of the total amount people can have in possession. And then the other issue that came up was sort of the frat house example, where if you have a number of plants per person in a dwelling unit happens to be a cohabitation arrangement like a fraternity house, you really are reaching a level of having a commercial operation. And that could be particularly problematic when they could, without regulation, occur in any residential zoning district. The other issue is, I think Nick just touched on it briefly, and that is the term display. You're allowed to display up to 1 ounce. While you may not be able to consume in public, what does it mean to be able to display the marijuana? There's a provision that says marijuana plants have to be grown out of public view, but is that something quite different? It sounds like if you can display it, you can have easy, open exchanges of marijuana in any public place. That should be looked at. The other category I want to cover real quickly is whether there's some immediate issues that need to be identified in the next few months. One that was touched on is the home processing of marijuana, particularly with the use of flammable gases. It's our understanding from our visit to Colorado that there's something in the order of 30 house fires or explosions that were related to people trying to use this method of processing on their kitchen stove. We are introducing an ordinance tonight to ban that locally. And I looked at one of the draft bills at the state level that included a similar kind of prohibition. Ours isn't exactly the same, but the notion is, and that is to immediately make sure people understand almost more of a public safety, public notice campaign than it is our ability to actually enforce this, but to let people know it's a particularly dangerous way to go, and we don't want people going onto YouTube and trying this at home and then affecting their home or their children or their neighbors in the apartment next door and so on. The other one that we see on the horizon needs to be addressed prior to whatever the state may do on the commercial side is open container issues. We have open container laws for alcohol. We're looking at whether or not we need some sort of open container rule for marijuana in vehicles to prevent or reduce the likelihood of consumption while driving. It may have to be somewhat different from alcohol. Perhaps it needs to be banned in the passenger compartment, say, for example, in a trunk, or if it's more like an SUV or station wagon, it needs to be out of arm's reach of any passenger, something like that. The other thing that my attorneys came back to me after their trip from Colorado was the need for a public education campaign so that people understand what the rules are. And I understand that they reviewed Colorado's program, which is called something like Good to Know, and it seems to be pretty effective at letting people know what the rules are, particularly with respect to personal use and consumption and what's allowed in sales, what's not allowed, and so on. The other thing they advocated was some sort of statewide data collection, and that, of course, is tricky because, A, there's always a certain expense with collecting the data and then transmitting it to a central location, but if the state wants to understand and the local governments want to understand what impacts are being had, there needs to be some method for collecting this that we can all look at and share and crunch together to see what works well and what is not working well. And the last one was touched on briefly under this category, and that had to do with the taxation. As I mentioned earlier, if your tax rates are different, you'll push people to medical marijuana. I think Colorado experienced growth between 1,000 registrants in 2009 to well over 100,000 a few years later. So that's going to be an issue. But also, as indicated, whenever you layer regulation on, there's an expense associated with that. For example, if you're going to have commercial grow with retail stores and you have regulations that control how it's produced, how safe it is, how it's sold, what kind of packaging, and so on, you increase the cost, and that does drive the black market. Colorado has a very thriving black market, and in fact, two states adjacent to Colorado have sued Colorado in the Supreme Court because of the amount of marijuana being transported out of Colorado and into their states. That's a real balancing act, because obviously you want certain regulations in place, but we have to understand that the more layers we have, the higher the cost, the greater the black market opportunities. The third category, there's a few more on the second category. This was touched on briefly. There's a significant issue with edibles. Anything from gummy bears that look just like the gummy bears that you get for your kids. All they've done is bought them and coated them with oils. Brownies, cookies, how much THC is in them, what's a serving, how are they packaged, can kids readily get into the packaging. That's got to be addressed. And then, of course, testing and work environment issues related to what employees might be exposed to in these environments. I think Colorado has, we just received Colorado's regulatory book. It's about an inch and a half thick, so it's no small feat once you start getting into commercial grows and manufacturing and retail sales to come up with the right kind of regulatory framework. And then the other thing about this would be with respect to licensing. Colorado has, I think, a two-year residency requirement in order to get a business license. I'm not sure if we can go 2 years, but I do think there's merit in looking at trying to, if we're going to do this, create a homegrown environment. It may help reduce, to some degree, criminal elements involved in this activity if these are people known to us and they have a history of being here and operating appropriately. So that's category number two. Category number three was in regards to whether or not there should or should not be a control board. I do think there's a need for some centralized authority at the state level. For us, generally speaking, although we have had our bumps here and there, the alcohol control board model works well for us, particularly where it allows for the possibility of local governments protesting the issuance of a state-level license. That's a great opportunity for us to weigh in and suggest and recommend conditions and interact with the board in terms of enforcement concerns. One model I've heard discussed is using some of the same staffing at the Alcohol Control Board to also support this board. There may be some merit to that in terms of having people there who have experience investigating individual cases, reviewing individual licenses, and processing those, particularly if the model ends up incorporating a lot of the same concepts out of the alcohol statutes. For example, the protest issue that I just mentioned. I saw some provisions regarding requiring local advisory boards. I can appreciate, particularly in the MATSU, that would be quite a demand on resources if you have an advisory board for each local jurisdiction as well as the borough itself. But the same would be true for us even if it's only one advisory board. We have all sorts of advisory boards. They're very difficult to staff consistently. They cost money to provide support staff. And because at our level, the assembly or city council is very easy to get a hold of, very easy to communicate with. I'm just not sure that an advisory board is a layer that we need to slow down the process. I'd much prefer that we stick with the local government model of the city council or the assembly handling the issues as they come up. In addition to concurring with the testimony provided by the folks you've heard today, I also agree with many of the comments that are contained in the Fairbanks No Star Borough letter. Particularly with respect to addressing private clubs in regards to consumption and local government control, particularly with zoning and land use issues. As you may know, just like the borough, we have local land use powers. And with respect to alcohol, we have what we call a conditional use permit process, where every alcohol license that the state provides has to also come with a local conditional use permit approved by the assembly. And the assembly, acting under its authority in that position, can deny the conditional use permit if it wants to. But what it's looking at are how this particular establishment may fit in with a neighborhood, whether it's going to be residential, commercial, industrial, traffic, hours of operation, parking, obviously its location with respect to schools or other sensitive areas of town and so on. And we'd like to make sure that we retain that power as we already have over alcohol establishments. And I know I blazed through that very, very fast, Madam Chair, but I wanted to sort of echo what was already said and not overdo it. I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
I appreciate your brevity on this, as we've gone through quite a few of the items. We do have a few questions. We'll take a few questions, and then I will defer to Assemblyman Hall for his comments. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. The conditional use permit requirement, is that something that comes through the local option, or is that a specific state statute for alcohol established use of alcohol licenses? Do you know that answer?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think it's part and parcel of what's in Title 29 for local governments in terms of the ability to exercise land use powers. We have conditional use permit processes for all sorts of land use. Alcohol just happens to be one of them. It's not prohibited by state statute.
So, Madam Chair, follow-up?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So then as long as the state wouldn't prohibit that use of the Title 29 power, you would still retain that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's my understanding in so much as the initiative doesn't explicitly prohibit the exercise of the power. However, I would prefer maybe something more direct and explicit that it, in fact, does not interfere with local government planning powers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Feinbold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony today. I really appreciate it. There's just a couple follow-up things I'd like to talk to you about. First of all, I'm not sure if you've read the entire section about the penalties of marijuana, but basically it says in AS 17.38.020B that where it's talking basically about taxes and an excise tax, and then it goes on to talk about, you know, plants can't be in public view, et cetera, and it says if a person violates a section, then the fine is $750. So, one, I wanted to know if you've looked at the different fees. There's also a $100 fine if it's unlawful to consume marijuana, $100. And then if false identification is given, it's a fine of up to $400. I'm just wondering if Anchorage has looked at those fees and if they're reasonable or if they need to be raised. And I know she's not dealing with the criminal aspects of it, but I do think that it's important to get cities to weigh in regards to this.
Yes. Through the chair, when we adopted the public place definition in our ordinance at our last meeting, we incorporated the state fine provision so that if somebody's in a public place and they are consuming, it's a $100 citation, which matches the initiative provision. Now, with respect to whether that's high enough or too high, I don't recall the assembly commenting on that specifically. I think we were thinking we would simply follow that state law and see how it plays out. Is it high enough to deter people from consuming? We'll see. I don't know that. I suspect that it may not be, but I don't know that you have the latitude to increase the fine. That'd be a question for your state legal.
Okay, I have a follow-up. Representative Reinbold.
And then another thing that concerned me when I was reading through the whole new statute is in Section 3. It's Section 43.61020 and then 43.61030. And then under that Section 3, it said the provisions of this act are independent and severable, and except where otherwise indicated in text, shall supersede conflicting statutes, local charters, ordinances, resolution, and other state and local provisions. If any provision of this act or application thereof to any person or circumstance is found to be invalid or unconstitutional, the remainder of this act shall be affected and shall be given effect to the fullest extent possible. I just want to make sure that there's room in this statute, even if we need to discuss this, open the conversation in regards to making sure that there's some sort of local control and local issues. So I'm really thankful that Representative Tilton is bringing this to the table to discuss. But I didn't know if you had the opportunity to read that Section 3 and if you had any input in regards to that.
Through the chair, yes, we're certainly aware of it. It's not uncommon to see this kind of language in legislation. We certainly want to not create conflicts that invite litigation. Nevertheless, to the extent possible, we do want to be able to exercise some local control or input, either through the recommendation process like you see for alcohol licensing or through the ability to enact our own provisions not inconsistent with the initiative that allow us to exercise some local management.
Absolutely. Well, through the chair,
Representative Reinbold,
we're definitely listening and would definitely like your input in regards to that.
Thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Nice to hear your voice. I think this is going to give Anchorage the opportunity to track all those conditional use permits. I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that many of the liquor operations in Anchorage, the conditional use permit files have been lost, and I know it's a big issue when some of these licenses come up for review. As a former assembly member myself, we've been there, done that. And I know that you guys will take good care of this process at the local level. The clerk's office is awesome at that. Were you on the phone when I mentioned the cash basis of these businesses and how I thought that was going to be an issue?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, yes, I did. If you'd like, what I've learned from my attorneys who went down to Colorado is, A, there is an increase in crime related to the cash-based economy nature of this. Two, that you know, the banking industry is shying away from this. I think Colorado's got some work ongoing to develop, what is it, a state-chartered credit union to address that issue. I understand also, this came up in our conversation while the testimony was being heard, that armored car carriers, for example, wouldn't serve these places, and now they're switching to maybe executive cars or something like that. Yeah,
wow.
So
okay.
And armored cars are now doing it. Yeah, so armored cars maybe are now coming around to it. But that is an issue. I don't know how we address that because obviously the biggest player there is people's concern about federal law issues and their ability to operate if they come into problems with that. And I understand that the new U.S. Attorney General has indicated she's not favorable towards the legalization of marijuana, so that may have a chilling effect on what might have otherwise been happening at the federal level. I don't know how we can. I don't know that we can address that very well at the local level. I mean, I know that certainly if we're looking at land use, we would have some concerns about security, lighting, as you mentioned, secure doors. But that doesn't necessarily address what happens when somebody leaves the premise and gets in their vehicle, whether it's a customer or an employee or an owner. And that may be one of the reasons we look at where are good places for these things to be located so we can reduce the chances of those kinds of crimes occurring.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Wheeler. I think it behooves us to pay close attention to the cash side of the business. Obviously, taxes will have to be paid since this is going to generate revenue, and both the state and the city will have to be prepared to deal with the cash as well as the banks. So I do trust that the legislature will be taking a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wheeler, for your testimony. I would like to now turn over some time to Assemblyman Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And my apologies for keeping you waiting so long.
That's fine. I'm going to make some brief statements here, and then I do have to run. I've got to take my wife to a doctor's appointment. You can see why our task as a local assembly is not going to be near as difficult as this could be because of the fact that we've got Mr. Wheeler and our legal department in place. And I would tell you that we intend to continue to follow their leadership because they're doing a great job of raising red flags for us, i.e. a public place and the penalty associated with. They're going to bring the processing of concentrates using gas products to us tonight. Because the interesting thing is when we were looking at opting out, we had a tremendous amount of public testimony, and it was ironic the way the testimony went at that time because it was pointed out to us that we were going to have the ability to write join in the regulations, to collect a lot of tax money to solve the state's fiscal gap. We were going to be able to make sure that this was safe, responsible, and accountable. And although it's interesting, as soon as the vote was 9-2, that we weren't opting out, that we were going into it, the messages began to change almost immediately about the public approved this the way it's written. You really shouldn't mess with it. Make sure you keep the taxes low enough that we're able to operate. Came in a totally different direction. So you, no question, are going to have your challenges. But I would tell you that the local assembly, is really looking to the state to do a good job on this, taking concerns throughout the community. But we think it's really important that you handle the heavy lifting in this in regards to coming up with a good set of state regulations. We've got concerns in regards to the licensing. As a matter of fact, we've got a question in our mind. The statute that was passed doesn't refer to a license anyplace in it. It just says to register with the state. And we really don't understand what that means because we've got a concern about how many licenses are going to be issued. And as with other individuals that have testified of what that process is going to be, I think Mr. Wheeler's comment about 2 years residency would be good. We assume, let's put it this way. We don't assume anything, but we're curious how decisions are going to be made on who gets licenses and who don't, whether you'll just draw for those. Also, we really would underline a concern earlier about people not actually owning these licenses so that they go out and gain value, because we're constantly dealing with that in our community where we've got a license that's up for sale or a movement, and then people come to us and say, wait, you cannot approve this. I've got $250,000 value in this, and if you don't let me do this, I'm going to lose the value of my liquor license. That becomes difficult for us at the time. We are very much interested in continuing to use our land use and conditional use, because quite honestly, with the alcohol, that's how we interject ourselves into that process. We've got a community council system in our community where every license that comes up for either a new license or a renewal goes to community councils for their input and their recommendations coming back. And as far as any conditions that they may want it, I'm one of those eternal optimists that you're going to get this absolutely perfect when you get done with the regulations and what amendments you're going to make to the statute, so that our job is going to be very, very easy, because as Ms. Drummond referred to earlier, we've been issuing conditional use on liquor licenses for so long that it's really not our finest hour for the fact that over a long period of time, we've got conditions on some that aren't on others, and if anything, everybody should be playing by the same rules. And I'll close by saying I think that's why it's really important that the vast majority of this be decided at the state level to avoid confusion throughout communities within the state, that we're all hopefully working under the same statutes and regulations, allowing us only that discretion that we have in our conditional use permits.
Thank you for your comments, Assemblyman Hall. We appreciate it. Are there any questions from the committee? No, there's no questions from the committee. I appreciate your comments. Is there any follow-up that you'd like to make, or last comments?
You know, I guess a bit of sympathy to you. I don't envy you the job that you've got coming at you. What I do think is a real asset you've got is Cindy Franklin over at the ABC board. I've had a couple of meetings with her, and I really think she's up to speed on this and is a very bright, intelligent person. And, you know, in reading the statute that got passed with the initiative, it appears that that's their responsibility of writing the regulations. But I would hope, you know, that probably there would be an insert in there that if that's the direction that it goes, that those regulations would come back to the legislature for approval once they're done drafting them. Thank you.
Thank you, Assemblyman Hall. Mr. Wheeler, is there any other final comments you'd like to make?
Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity, but no, I don't have any further comments. Thank you.
All right. Well, I thank you both for your time this morning. Are there any comments from the committee or questions? Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, one of the things that as we go forward I hope we discuss is the definition of marijuana in the law excludes, basically appears to exclude, you know, fiber and those kinds of things if we're growing hemp. The question is whether hemp growing, you know, without THC is going to be regulated as marijuana or not regulated as marijuana, because I think that that could have some impacts with this dual definition of what is and what isn't marijuana. And so, you know, really haven't heard talk of that. Probably should have talked to Mayor DeVilbiss, but hopefully the MATSU, which is a highly agricultural area, as well as the Kenai Peninsula, maybe when we talk to Fairbanks, maybe they could address that and see how they are looking at that coming forward, because we're looking at an agricultural industry also, which may have some play in here, because we're talking about, you know, in one part it's the same species or genus, but in the other part it's classified as not marijuana if it doesn't have certain levels of THC. So I think that that's something that we just need to expand the view and take a look at. But I appreciate all the testimony we've had today.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other thing we didn't touch on at all was the testing issue, but I think that's on the Hess side. I think the scientists need to get involved and help out the legislature here in terms of the definitions, the amounts, and all of that stuff. I've read a considerable amount online, and there's a great deal of interest in it, and I think we're moving in the right direction. So thank you for the testimony today.
All right. Thank you, committee members, and I want to thank the municipalities' representatives that joined us today. We appreciate your thoughtful and insightful testimony as we all wrestle with the complexities of implementing Ballot Measure 2. On Thursday, we will continue to hear testimony from the municipal stakeholders. We will hear from the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Kenai Peninsula. With that, we are adjourned at, what time is it? 9:50.